Hey guys, and welcome back to the Pew Review. We are on episode 6, and I'm your host, Matt Jarrett, along with the one and only Jed Shermer, lead minister here at Whiting Christian Church. And we've got some awesome questions for you today.
Yeah.
So, this is just a conversation between me and Jed. We're taking questions from the congregation, whether it be about sermon topics, whether it be about stuff they learned in Sunday school, about faith in general. And if you have any additional questions, we invite you to text your questions to the number 833-430-6152. Cool. So with that said, we're going to get into our first question, and it reads, Rome was known for so many different ways to torture enemies. Why did Christ have to be crucified versus other methods?
Yeah. So let's jump in. We're going to do some Bible study to answer this question. Book of Galatians is where we're going to be doing most of our study. Galatians chapter 3, verses 10 through 14 is going to help give us an answer to some of this. And we'll extrapolate from there. So I'll start reading verse 10 in Galatians 3. So it says, For all who rely on the works of the law are under a curse, because it is written, everyone who does not do everything written in the book of the law is cursed. And so what's interesting about that is, right, it's saying if anyone has broken the law, right, we talked about this on a Sunday, 613 laws, if anybody's broken one of those laws, they are cursed.
Yikes.
And so, yes. Yep, exactly. And there's other places in the Bible that talk about this too. James 2:10, for whoever keeps the entire law yet stumbles at one point is guilty of breaking all of it. Mm-hmm. And so, and when we think about this as Christians all the time, if we sin once, we are as guilty as any other sinner. And that's the reality.
That's a sobering statement.
And I
mean, no matter, you can't change it any other way.
Yeah. And the reason for that is because the consequence of sin is death. Mm-hmm. And so that's there's no greater penalty than that.
So little white lie, murder, both deserve death.
Same consequence. Now, we shouldn't get confused on saying the little white lie is just as evil as murder, but there's different consequences in our earthly reality. And obviously there is a morality difference in those two. We're talking about spiritual consequences.
Yes.
There's an equivalency across the board in sin. Mm-hmm. And so Galatians talks about anybody who has broken any single law is under a curse. And the curse is really, again, the curse of death, right? It's the curse of Genesis 3. They get kicked out of the garden. They're removed from the presence of God. And they will experience death because they can't eat from the tree. This is, you know, I think today's culture, we think of curses and we think of, you know, modern, like, witches and different things placing curses. Not necessarily the type of curse that we're talking about with Scripture. Mm-hmm. So that's 3:10. So verses 11 through 12 in Galatians 3. Now it is clear that no one is justified before God by the law, because the righteous will live by faith, but the law is not based on faith. Instead, the one who does these things will live by them. And so what it's getting at with that, no one except Jesus has ever perfectly lived the law. Mm-hmm. He's the only one to ever have perfectly lived the law. And so we, under grace, are justified through faith. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a justification through faith in the law because it was purely about actions. It was purely about you living perfectly. That's mm-hmm. how you are justified, is by living a perfect life. Mm-hmm. And so if you mess up once, you are no longer justified. You are sinful and cursed.
No pressure, huh?
Yeah. So we get that. This is where it gets into the important part in the question that we're dealing with. Verse 13, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, because it is written, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. And then verse 14, the purpose was that the blessing of Abraham would come to the Gentiles by Christ Jesus, so that we could receive the promised Spirit through faith. And so those with blemish, right, those who failed in holding the law, are incapable of replacing someone. Mm-hmm. And again, this goes back to the thought that sin, the punishment for sin is death. And so if we understand the punishment of sin to be death, well, I can't, if I'm guilty, right, we're both facing the death penalty. Like, don't worry, I'll take yours on for me after I deal with mine. Well, it's not going to work because I'm going to deal with mine and be dead.
So
I can't, you know, so it has to be someone without blemish, who's not guilty of sin, who's not under the curse that everyone else is under, to be able to take on in this manner that we are talking about. And so it talks about, it's quoting from Deuteronomy 21, when it says, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. Now, so there's some confusion in this because some take it to mean, for whatever reason, being hung on a tree was a worse death than other forms, stoning or strangling or whatever. And that's not what it's getting at. What it's getting at is being hung on a tree was public humiliation. You were hung on a tree because you were cursed. It was a way to, I don't know why, my mind goes to Pirates of the Caribbean, where, you know, they, you know, make a point to show pirates hanging from the gallows or whatever.
And Dead Men Tell No Tales
And, well, and they would go, like, as, I think it's the very first scene of the movie where Jack's coming into the harbor and he's...
On the sinking ship.
Yeah, on the sinking ship, and he salutes his fellow comrades who are hanging or whatever. And they did that as a warning to other pirates, right? It was a real thing that was done to warn other pirates, this is what happens when, for piracy. And so back in the day in the Old Testament, that's what they would do to some heinous criminals, is we're going to hang you... from a tree in the public view as a warning to other criminals, don't do this, this is where you'll end up. And so that's the curse that it's talking about, is those people were cursed because of how heinous of criminals they were. And what's interesting about this is it mentions in Deuteronomy 21 that they were not to hang there overnight. Because it would bring a, the curse would spread across the land at that point, and the whole everything would be cursed.
Interesting.
So they had to be taken down, and this matters. And let me finish. Well, I'll get to why. The cross. We're getting there. I'm taking the long way around, but we're getting to why the cross.
Yeah, this is good.
Verse 14 talks about the blessing of Abraham, and in Genesis. 12, I believe it's 12, when God blesses Abraham, he says that he will be a blessing to many nations, that through his descendants there will be a blessing to all nations. And that's a foreshadowing of being a blessing to Gentiles, that non-Jews, right? Because it was the law was given for the Jews. It was their way to be justified before God. It did not include everyone. It was for the Jews. Justification through faith, grace, includes everyone.
So we would have been hosed under the old law.
Yeah. And that's what it's getting at. So, did it have to be crucifixion? The reason I pulled up this verse is because it demonstrates from an early period God's sovereignty and providence in bringing about his particular desires, but also God is omniscient, and he knows what was going to happen, and so has foreshadowed that throughout the Old Testament. So did it have to be Roman crucifixion? Could they, you know, I know you had mentioned in a conversation about some different ways of, you know, tying people in bags with animals, throwing them in a river and different things.
And I mean, public maulings were a big thing. You know, most people, it seems to me like, you know, when they're talking about Roman culture, we think of like Russell Crowe and like Gladiator and, you know, all of these really other, I mean, sadistic ways of trying to hurt people. And the thing that I was kind of intrigued about was, okay, you know, if it was a political, you know, if there was a political concern, you know, from the Jews or anything like that, you know, especially from the Pharisees, why not just put Jesus in prison and then just, you know, have someone do him in while he's in prison, while it's more quiet that way, you know?
Well, to answer that, we see in the final stages of Jesus' arrest before he's put on the cross, when he's before Pilate, and the Jews demand crucifixion. They demand crucifixion, and the reason for that is because it was the most gruesome death that the Romans had come up with. And it was reserved for the most heinous of crimes. Mm-hmm. It was reserved for the worst of the worst criminals. And so that was, so back to what we talked about with Deuteronomy 21, this was the Jews' way of hanging him from a tree to show, to demonstrate to the public, and to denounce his ministry.
Yeah.
Right? Because he had a very public ministry for 3 years where he attacked them. I say attacked, rightfully attacked them publicly and called them out and had a ministry that was seen by thousands and thousands of people. So they want him to hang publicly and for it to be seen. This is what happens when you cross us.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you come against us. This is what we. This is what's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted that public execution. And so, did it have to be the cross? The issue is not whether the Jews or the Romans could have done something else. Mm-hmm. It's about what God had decided. Mm-hmm. And I think God knew at that time frame what crucifixion, what the public execution was going to be, and he knew that Jesus was going to hang on a cross because he's omniscient and is not just, he doesn't just know the future, he's present in all moments of time, and so he was there, right? When he's dealing with Adam and Eve in Genesis 3, he is already there at the crucifixion, right? He's present in that moment simultaneously.
Wow.
And so because of that, we can study. So, yes, I think it did have to be the cross because God knew it would be and had foreshadowed it throughout the Old Testament in several different places all the time. We have, again, so Deuteronomy 21, it's a huge deal of, you know, curses the one who hangs on a tree. And obviously, Paul understands this because he's correlating it back to Deuteronomy 21. And as I mentioned, they had to be taken down. They couldn't hang there overnight. Jesus' body wasn't hung overnight. They took him down. He didn't last that long on the cross. He lasted 6 hours. And so they took him down before nightfall and buried him. There's several other places. You know, you have the Psalms. You have the Psalm where it talks about his body being poured out. And it talks about his clothes being having lots cast for them. And
divided up.
Yeah. There's all this foreshadowing of what's to take place. You have, again, back to Deuteronomy again, or Exodus, you have the story of, you know, Israel is rebelling, and so God sends snakes to come and bite them, and Moses is like, hey, can we stop this? And so God's like, well, here, make a bronze snake, put it on a pole, raise it up. And then Jesus in John 3 talks about this and talks about the necessity of that being raised up and for those to look at the thing hanging on the pole. Over and over and over again, we see foreshadowing of the cross. So did it have to be the cross? Yes, because God knew that's what was going to happen. There was no, it wasn't like God was going to foreshadow throughout the Old Testament and then suddenly the Jews were going to do something else. God knew what they were going to do. Now, what this gets into, the can of worms that this gets into, because every week I want to open more cans of worms.
Yeah, we're all about that.
Is it's a beautiful example of the complexity between human free will and God's sovereignty and providence. There is a beautiful, I am not denying the Jews and the Romans' free will to put Jesus on the cross. I think they made that decision. God, from forever, knew they were going to make that decision and weaved it into history that we can look back at the Old Testament and see his work leading to that.
It's marvelous to see the timelines match up with that just seamlessly.
And so, yes, and that's, and so did it have to be a crucifixion? I think yes, because God knew it would be. And so,
because otherwise it would question his perfection.
Yeah. And, I mean, and that's,
getting down to this,
there's too much in the Old Testament pointing to the cross for it to not be the cross.
Sure.
Now, again, I don't want people to get confused. I'm not denying the free will of the Jews who yelled crucify him or Pilate and his actions in crucifying Jesus.
Right.
They made those decisions. But even in those moments, Jesus points to you don't understand. You think that you are making this decision, but you don't understand how this is going to glorify God because this is fulfilling everything that he has said.
It's amazing when you put it that way.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful. So let's move on to our next question here. What does it look like to live a life of radical generosity as Christians?
Yes. Here's where my mind goes with that, because I have fallen into this temptation several times, and I think this is our temptation when it comes to generosity. Mm-hmm. The temptation that I fall into is, man, if I won the lottery, I could do such cool things. Mm-hmm. I would be so generous. I would give it to the church. I'd give it to the camp. I'd give it to all these different ministries. I'd support missions. We'd, you know, build wells in Africa. We'd do all these different things if I won the lottery. Mm-hmm. And so we get into this daydreaming mode of man, if only that would happen. God, give me lots of money so I can do this. Mm-hmm. And we have to pause and ask ourselves the question, what am I doing with my money right now? Mm-hmm. Generosity is not tied to how much money you have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most crucial things that we have to understand is people think, well, I don't have the money to be generous. Mm-hmm. And it's just not true.
Right.
And so I think a good passage to understand this is the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Mm-hmm. And talents, we get this confused. It's not a skill set. It's not your natural gifting is what it's talking about. Talents was a weight, a measure, and kind of the max measurement of money. Mm-hmm. And so bags of gold is you know, almost the equivalent for it. And so in that, we see there was three different servants. One was given five, one was given three, and then one was given one. The one with five used it right away, doubled his money. Hey, good and faithful servant, you'll be given more in the next life. The guy who had three went and did and invested, brought back double his return, brought back six. It's the exact same. Whenever I teach on this parable, I think it's important to understand that although they are given different amounts, the response to how they used it is the exact same. Mm-hmm. They doubled their return. So the one brought back 10, the other one brought back 6, but they received the same response, and I think that's important. It's not about how much you bring back. It's about how did you use what you were given. Mm-hmm. Because then the third guy is the mess up.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
He's the one that just went and buried it in the ground.
Yep.
And because he was fearful of what's going to happen if I lose this, he's going to be mad. And really, it was covering for being lazy. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to go through the work. And he's like, well, if I just bury it, don't worry about it. He comes back and, hey, here you go. I didn't earn anything, but I didn't lose it. Here you go. And the master comes back and is furious. Like, no, you're stupid. Like, this is, like, you could have put it in a, instead of burying it, you could have put it in a bank and earned interest at least.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and called him like a wicked, evil servant.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And so what I find interesting about that parable, and the reason I bring it up with this question, is because in the very beginning of it, it says that they were given according to their ability. Mm-hmm. And now, I am not saying that to make the claim that you're poor because you're bad with money. Mm-hmm. That's an individual situation that you'd have to... Now, some people are poor because they're bad with money. I'm not saying that either.
Yeah, that's a case-by-case basis.
Yes, it's a case-by-case basis. But they were given according to their ability. And so I think if we have this understanding of, well, God, give me more so that I can be... So I can use it to bless and to be generous and to give. Well, God sometimes, yes, gives according to our ability. Why would he give you more if you're not using what you have already? If you're not being good stewards of what he has blessed you with? And this, again, is the idea that generosity is not tied to how much money you have. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, I'm pretty sure, but Mark 12, there's the widow's offering. Mm-hmm. And you have, you know, the big religious people who are, you know, proudly throwing bags of money in. Mm-hmm. And then you have the widow who drops the two little coins in. And Jesus, you know, asks his disciples, who gives more? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, she gave out of, you know, so much of what she had, which is more than the bags that they're
being. Yeah.
And so, how do we be generous? Mm-hmm. How can we be generous? Well, it starts with stewardship. Mm-hmm. It doesn't start with giving money. It starts with using your money well. Mm-hmm. Are you wasteful with your money? Are you, do you know where your money is going, mm-hmm. right? I see things all the time of people forgetting that they had subscriptions and, you know, months and months of not using this at all, mm-hmm. but they're paying for it.
Yeah.
Right? Are you being good stewards of what you have? Are you wasteful in your spending? And this is not to say that you can't spend things on yourself, but are you doing good with what God has provided? Mm-hmm. And so the other thing with it is generosity is about sacrifice. Typically, when we think of generosity, there's three things, and this is going to get confusing because mm-hmm. of the parable. But it's time, treasure, and talents is typically the way we talk about generosity.
Sure.
Now, when we talk about talents, I am talking about skill set. Mm-hmm. But generosity is tied to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It is tied to sacrifice, right? It's not giving time when we're bored. Mm-hmm. Like, I have nothing else going on. Yes, I guess I'll go help. Mm-hmm. Right? It's giving time when I could be doing something else. Mm-hmm. When maybe I should be doing something else, but I'm going to sacrifice that for the sake of helping these people. That's yep. generosity.
Mm-hmm. There's more skin in the game, it seems like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, right? The people in the widow's offering were giving out of their comfortability. Mm-hmm. They were giving out. There was no sacrifice mm-hmm. in their giving. And that's what Jesus is pointing at. The widow's mm-hmm. offering was more sacrifice mm-hmm. than what the, and so therefore it was meant more. And so, right, it's not just giving the money that I don't need. Well, I have more or whatever. It's sacrificing. It's, mm-hmm. I could have bought some nicer food or whatever. I could have, you know, got that subscription to Netflix and not mm-hmm. bummed off my friends anymore or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? It's taking that money that we could have used for other things, for ourselves, mm-hmm. sacrificing it to be generous for someone else. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with talents. It's right. The sacrifice for talents looks a little bit different in the sense that I'm doing this not for the glory of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this because I want to love and I want to help. Mm-hmm. That's what gets into is, again, the Pharisees were really good about, well, I'll use my talents to, hey, look at me and look at what I did. Mm-hmm. And that's not how we sacrifice with our talents. It's, I want to do something for the good. You know, I think of, you know, those who serve in like the booth in the church.
Yeah.
Right? They do so not for the glory of being seen. They mm-hmm. they just want to help. Mm-hmm. And there is great sacrifice in that because they don't have to be the people. Now, a lot of those people don't want to be in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the type of thing that we're dealing with. And so if you want to live a life of radical generosity, mm-hmm. get your head out of the clouds. Stop dreaming about what ifs. Mm-hmm. How are you being generous right now? Are you good stewards with your money? Are you using it well? Are you using it in a way that does cost something to you? That's how we're generous.
And what would you say to someone, say in the congregation or just a Christian in general, who has the statement of, well, I would love to invest and, you know, I want to do more, but I don't see the return on my investment like right now. Like say, for example, you know, everything is just done so quickly in our culture nowadays. Yeah. What would you say to someone who says, well, I don't know if it's going to benefit anyone because I can't see the fruits of my labor, so I'm just not going to do anything.
Yeah, yeah. So I think with that, one of the things that we get into with generosity is we weigh and measure how much we want to give because of our mindset that this is mine to weigh and measure what mm-hmm. I use. Again, with the importance of the parable of the talents, it wasn't theirs. Mm-hmm. It wasn't theirs.
No.
You know?
It was the master's.
It was the master's. And we are given everything that we have in life. Mm-hmm. There's been incredible people in the church. We had, you know, just a handful of students going to CIY and didn't really need a full 15-passenger van at times. And so, like, hey, big ask. Could I steal one of your vehicle? You have a big 3-passenger Tahoe or whatever. Mm-hmm. Can I steal that for a week? drive it hundreds of miles, pray nothing happens, but you never know, and you be without it for a week. And and their response was, well, it's not mine. It's God's. Take it, use it however you need.
Yeah.
And so...
Cool story, by the way.
Yeah. And if we're worried about returns for ourselves, our understanding of what it is, what it's not ours in the first place. And so I'm not worried about the returns for myself. I want to be worried about the returns for God. And you know, God makes it clear in Scripture that if we use what He has given us for Him, it will not come back empty-handed. And so I think that's important. If we have the right mindset that this is not mine, that I am investing this for God and for God's glory, it will bring glory for God.
Amen. It's such a good response. We're going to move on to our third and final question for the day. Jed, what is some advice on how to be prepared to share your faith? And they reference the scripture verse from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, to be prepared to give an answer.
Yep. Yeah. Let me read that. And I'm going to jump up to verse 13.
Sure.
Who then will harm you if you are devoted to what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness, you are blessed. Do not fear them or be intimidated. But, and this is verse 15, but in your hearts regard Christ the Lord as holy, ready at any time to give a defense to anyone who asks for a reason for the hope that is in you. The context of this matters because the context is Christians facing persecution. And it's a response to persecution. Because if we... Christians live out persecution different than most. And the oppressors are going to recognize this. And people around them are going to recognize this. Why are all these Christians dying for their faith? Why are they facing the torture that they did, right? The Jesus's closest followers, all but maybe John, were martyred for their faith in brutal ways. Paul was beheaded. You know, Peter, the thought is that he was hung on a cross, but he didn't want to do it the same as Jesus. He didn't feel worthy of being the same as Jesus, so they hung him upside down. You know, you have Christians, other Christians that were beheaded. You have Christians that were flayed alive, brutal things. And people see this and they start to ask, like, why? Why are you doing this when the simplicity of just saying, no, I don't believe in this guy exists, right? No, I don't want, you know, and they're mind boggled by this. And so this passage is getting at you, number one, the way that you live should prompt questions. It should prompt questions in people's lives. And number two, you need to be able to answer, this is why. This is why I go through what I do. So the wording is interesting in the passage because it seems to range not just from simple curious questions in private of, I'm sure we get questions at times of, you know, hey, you have some coming over, you have private conversations, text message, whatever. And people are like, hey, why do you believe? You know, there's those simple questions. But I think it does range all the way to public accusations of someone publicly attacking Christians. And you see this on social media all the time. People, what's his last name? Cliff, the apologist.
Knechtel?
Yes. Yeah. You know, he goes around to the different college campuses and whatnot. And, you know, he gets public accusations all the time. And it's his job. So the word answered here in verse 15, ready at any time to give a defense. A defense is another, it can also be translated answered, give an answer to anyone, is the Greek word, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but it's apologia. And so that's where we get the word apologetics. And so it's about defense of the faith, which is probably why the CSB translates it as defense. And so that's what he does, right? That's what Cliff does, is he's an apologist. And so he goes around and defends the faith. I'm going to preach the gospel. And then when public accusations come, because I'm different, I'm living different, especially on these college campuses, I can't just take these public accusations and then wither away and not answer.
Yeah.
Right? It's our job, if we're going to publicly declare something, to publicly answer. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he does. And that's what we need to be prepared to do. And I think an important part of this is there's a contrast with Christianity and many different religions that we see. Many religions, you know, and I think of, and this is going to anger people, but that's fine. I think of Mormons. Mm-hmm. I think of Jehovah's Witnesses. I think of Scientology. Things of that nature. If you notice, there's a lot of things they try to keep private until mm-hmm. you're a part of it and ingrained in it, and then we'll like fill you in on some stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And otherwise, they want to keep it private. Mm-hmm. And you see this in their buildings. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of windows, right? And this is something, this is a tangent a little bit, but this is something that drives me nuts about how we currently do worship spaces mm-hmm. in Christianity, is we like, I'm assuming it's because of the screens and we want controlled, you know, areas for lighting and whatnot, mm-hmm. but we like these dark and closed worship spaces, and mm-hmm. I hate it. Mm-hmm. Christianity is not private. Mm-hmm. It is not supposed to be private. Mm-hmm. And it drives me nuts, right? The early church, other than meeting in homes at times, met in the temple. Mm-hmm. They met in the public square mm-hmm. in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And it was not we're not going to answer your questions until you join. We're not, you know, we're going to hide some things about who we are until you come and join us. No, mm-hmm. No. You have questions, let's answer them.
Yeah.
Right? And I think anything that I think this is one of the great things about live streaming services nowadays mm-hmm. is
you get to see what's going on.
We're not trying to hide what we do on Sunday mornings.
Right.
Right? We will throw it into the modern public square of social media and say, mm-hmm. this is who we are, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. And this is actually part of the reason, you know, yesterday when we were talking about the prayer requests and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, I want to be careful about, I understand that maybe some prayer requests can be a private thing, but I want to be careful about in our service mm-hmm. trying to shut that off from the public and say, mm-hmm. well, we don't want you to hear this portion.
Right.
I want to be careful with that. Not saying, you know, if someone wants a prayer request to be private, then mm-hmm. then let's share it in private. But mm-hmm. let's understand Sunday morning service mm-hmm. to be public. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because our culture deems Christianity as exclusive in nature. Mm-hmm. And no.
We're all inclusive.
Come partake.
Yeah.
Come participate with us. Mm-hmm. We are not trying to hide who we are. And I think this gets into that of, mm-hmm. you know, if you have questions, let's mm-hmm. answer them.
And one of the things that I'm really grateful for this, for being a part of this church body is that, you know, we really do emphasize prayer. I mean, between doing stuff in the open forum on Sunday mornings to have opportunities for prayer requests and yeah. praises. But then we also have the opportunity to do stuff with our prayer chains. And, you know, there's times I don't know who to pray for because I don't know what to pray for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and that would be, and that helps strengthen my personal prayer life too, just to be able to say, hey, you know, I want to lift you up in prayer mm-hmm. and just to support you in any way that I can. And I mean, there's reciprocity both ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
So. Well, and I think the other part of that too is we are not perfect people.
No.
We have struggles mm-hmm. and we have things that we have to go to God to get help for. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to understand that. Too often, people will be really normal with me mm-hmm. and then we'll get talking about jobs and like, hey, what do you do? Well, I'm a pastor. And all of a sudden they like shut down, you know?
Yep.
Like, oh man, like, this is the type of guy who's got his whole life put together. Mm-hmm. He's this goody two-shoes. He's a prude. Like, I'm a person, mm-hmm. you know? Like, we're people. Mm-hmm. I have my struggles. Mm-hmm. I have things of a sinful nature that I deal with on a daily basis. I'm not mm-hmm. Jesus. I'm not perfect. And I don't want to be a person that tries to hide that, mm-hmm. you know? And that's in the sermons. I try not to hide that. you know, here are the things that I struggle with, and here are the things that I try to work on. And now, I there's a difference in being unashamedly sinful. Mm-hmm. I am extremely shameful mm-hmm. of my sin and seek repentance every day. Mm-hmm. But, sorry, back on topic. So getting to the ultimate question of what are some ways to be prepared mm-hmm. On this front? I think there's two things that are necessary. And I think too often the modern view of faith is that faith is belief without reason. Mm-hmm. And that's not faith at all. Mm-hmm. I quoted C.S. Lewis yesterday, and I was on a C.S. Lewis kick when I was studying, apparently. So I have a quote from him. And he says, "I'm not," and this is from Mere Christianity. It says, "I am not asking anyone to accept Christianity if his best reasoning tells him that the weight of evidence is against it." Mm-hmm. That's true. I am not on a Sunday morning telling anybody you should be a Christian and just trust me on that. Mm-hmm. No. Examine it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this comes down to, can you answer the question, this is why I believe? Because notice it doesn't just say, explain your faith. It says reason for hope in 1 Peter. Mm-hmm. Reason. It has to be reason. So we need two things in these answers that we provide. I do think that we need anecdotal evidence, mm-hmm. Our own personal experience, and I'll get into that. And I also think that we have to have rational thought drawn from evidence. Mm-hmm. I think those are crucial things. So rational evidence. Let me read a passage from just a verse quick from Romans 1:20. This is a verse common in apologetics used. So it says, "For his invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen since the creation of the world, being understood through what he has made. As a result, people are without excuse." Right? This is huge, right? We can look at creation mm-hmm. and see God.
Yeah.
Not
something's different.
Not in a good feeling. It's like, oh, I see God and the beauty of... No. In creation itself, and there are many apologetic arguments in this sense. Mm-hmm. Thomas Aquinas came up with several back in the... I wrote a paper on him, 1200, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. He's old Catholic guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Thomas Aquinas had several arguments for the existence of God. One of them, the immovable mover, mm-hmm. If he was a big scientist. Mm-hmm. And so if everything in the universe is moving, then there had to be something at the start mm-hmm. to begin the movement.
Right.
To start everything in existence mm-hmm. moving. And because,
for every action, there's an equal and opposite
reaction. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if we think of like the Big Bang and everything's expanding outward, currently still expanding. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is what scientists believe right now. And it all stems from this little point. Well, what started? Where did that come from?
And
they talk about the different particles and whatever that was a part of the Big Bang, mm-hmm. but they have no answer to where those came from, the origin of those things. And so it's the idea of an immovable mover. Mm-hmm. Now, you have several layers in apologetics of intelligent design. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites, I'm a big astronomy nerd, mm-hmm. and so I really like the Goldilocks zone. Mm-hmm. The Earth lives in a Goldilocks zone. There are dozens of things that scientists have understood when looking for another planet that could inhabit life like Earth. There, we have to have these things. Mm-hmm. And it's... simple things. A sun of our size and our the life cycle that it's in. You have to have the tilt on the axis of the Earth is necessary. A large planet like Jupiter to sway large comets and different things and asteroids from hitting the Earth. There's all these different things that are necessary for life to exist, and we have yet to find a perfect place like Earth to exist in that sense. And so
it's
I'm like, at one point, like, okay, this is not an accident. Mm-hmm. Right? And the math is not mathing that this is an accident. Mm-hmm. Right? This is far greater than winning the lottery. And now on another level of intelligence design, you can come down to the earth. And we had a study with students talking about the molecular structure of the body. Mm-hmm. And you know,
one of my favorite things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the cells run on machines. Mm-hmm. Living machines, and you can't evolve a machine, mm-hmm. Is one of the things that this was talking about, is you can't evolve, you know, you can't take a small engine and then, you know, if you take away, right, the three things that an engine needs, right, it needs air, fire, and fuel. Mm-hmm. This is just what I've learned. I have very little knowledge in mechanics, but this is what I know of diagnostics, mm-hmm. with an engine. Mm-hmm. Is you work through those three things. If your engine's not running, check these things. Is it getting air? Is it getting fire? Is it getting fuel? Mm-hmm. And you can't take one of those away and expect it for a core component to evolve into the system. Mm-hmm. It has to be there from the beginning, and so it's these mechanisms that run our cells. Mm-hmm. It shows that it's more likely that they didn't evolve, but that they were designed, mm-hmm. and so we see that, and we can make the connection that this is God, mm-hmm. and so there's a whole mixture of philosophical and scientific discovery pointing towards. Something did all of this. Mm-hmm. There's reasoning. And so reasoning matters. Mm-hmm. If you're a Christian and you can't answer the question, this is why I believe God exists, mm-hmm. more than just the anecdotal that we'll get into here in a second, then you need to answer that. You have to come to that. There's a reason. Mm-hmm. Okay. The anecdotal side, you need both sides. And here's why. Here's why you need both. Pure rational reasoning is too impersonal and cold. People are going to have a hard time connecting with this.
Sure.
Right? There's some people that are not scientific minded. Mm-hmm. We are more in that sense, in that logical. There's some people that just, they don't care about science, mm-hmm. and you spout a bunch of statistics about them and they're not going to connect with it.
Yeah.
They might understand it, but they're, mm-hmm. not going to connect with it.
Yeah.
And so testimonies are a powerful example of this is the reasoning, but here is my experience. Mm-hmm. Here's how the testimony blends those two together, mm-hmm. Of experience and reason. And so, you know, this is where I was, this is where I am now, and here's how I've personally experienced God in all of this. Mm-hmm. That matters. That connects with people. And so, but we can't have just that, because personal experience without rationality is circumstantial, mm. and is going to be seen as untrustworthy.
Yeah.
You need both.
Need both.
And so if you want to be able to answer the question, the reason for the hope that you have, work on whatever you are lacking in those two areas. Maybe you have a great testimony of, you know, I've really worked out. Here's my personal experiences with God. Here's how I've seen him. Okay, work on the rational side. This is why... Not just why I'm stepping out in faith I don't really know, but I'm just going to trust.
Yeah.
Right? That's not what faith is. It's this is what I've seen, and I am trusting that God is the answer to what, mm-hmm. I have seen. And so work on whatever area you lack. And so, you know, maybe you need to go get some books on apologetics and study that. Maybe you need to work on writing out your testimony for the first time. Have I experienced God in my life? Where have I seen that? And examine that, so that when you do live your life differently as a Christian, you can provide an answer.
That's so good.
So,
well, guys, I just want to say thank you again for taking the time to listen to this podcast. If you have questions that you'd like us to have addressed on this podcast, please text your questions to 833-430-6152. As always, Jed, thanks for being here with me, and we will see you in the next episode of The Pew Review. Have a good day, guys.